coming at you from the basement of Coast City Comics, right between the Gin Still and the old X-Force comics. This is Actually Comics for March 2nd, 2021. Good evening, Bob. Welcome to our podcast.
I love it here.
It's so cozy.
Yeah.
I like the drapes that we bought for this podcast.
really
brightens up the place.
That rug really ties the room together.
It sure do. So this is kind of a short week, which is kind of cool because there is so much quality in this short week. There's so much stuff that I'm so excited to talk about. And believe it or not, it's all DC stuff, which is really fucking weird for me. It's very strange for me to be very excited about DC, but here we are. I'm really excited about DC this week. And honestly, I am very excited about the future of DC now. Like, Future State made me excited about the potential for what they could do, and this, whatever it is, the Wild Blue Yonder event is making me very excited about where they're going to go. So
actually, Wild Beyonder would be a good name for it. The Infinite Frontier.
Infinite Frontier. That is the name of this event. Correct.
Yeah.
Now I remember. Yeah. But we'll talk about that eventually. So first off, we've got Amazing Spider-Man, the Nick Spencer trade paperback 11, Last Remains, and we have the debut of the new America Chavez series, which is a mini series. It's a 5-issue mini, but pretty cool. This is kind of a thing for people who are missing the West Coast Avengers series. It's very it definitely falls into that genre. It's not the same. It doesn't have the same tone of writing, but it definitely is of that world. So
enjoy. Right. Also, it starts with them fighting giant moles.
Yes. So the giant mole fight.
West Coast Avengers.
I mean, yes, of course. Yeah. It's, you know, there's no Jeff the Land Shark, but still, they're doing their best.
No.
Amethyst, the trade paperback is out. That's cool. You enjoyed the Amethyst series from Wonder Comics. Am I correct?
Yeah, I did. It was good. It was it was good. Also, like, just on an all ages kind of realm. It's good. But I liked the story and art, and it was very, like, kind of reverential of the original Amethyst, which I liked when I was a ute.
Yeah, nice. So Avengers 43 is out. This series is a hot mess. I was excited about the potential, and then it just turned into this just like really just dumb as shit like superhero fight. And I mean, I love Jason Aaron to death. And I know that there's a point to some of this, and I know that it'll be better than the whole will be better than this particular issue, but it definitely seems like it's just kind of like, who's going to get the Phoenix Force? Who fucking cares? Just do it. Stop this nonsense. It's like an American Idol for superheroes trying to get the Phoenix Force.
It's great.
I do not care. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
When, like, superheroes have like good guy fights, I just don't give a shit, and that's all this is.
Yeah. But, well, especially when it's like, you know, it's not going to be one of the Avengers. Like, I mean, maybe I guess it will be, but it's like, you know, will it be Captain America or Black Panther that will be the Phoenix? It's like, really? Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean,
and then I don't know, but
you already know it's okay, you already know it was Wolverine at one point, so you already know that it was going to be Wolverine. It was also going to be Quentin Quire at one point. So eventually Quentin Quire
that
will be
work.
The Phoenix. So.
Yeah, that would actually work. I things. Would be down with that.
Yes. But there were actually really good covers. I'm really digging this, the two-tone covers that they're doing for Marvel as their variants.
Oh, yeah.
They're really awesome.
Yeah,
they're
it was nice.
They're like that old school like Marvel art for like trading cards and all sorts of weird shit that they used to put out with that art on them. That super cool.
Yeah, this one was like Ant-Man and the Wasp, but it was like Michael Cho or someone. So it was like this really kind of cool, like, you don't have Darwin Cook anymore, but like, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
There's people who do that kind of throwback style a little bit.
Yep. It's nice. Batman 106. Here we go. Here it is. Here's the beginning of it. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Could not have been possibly happier with this Batman comic. I loved it to death.
Yeah.
Really good. The artwork is perfect. The coloring is more than perfect. The story is the kind of Batman story that I want. It's like, the highs and lows are perfect for when it gets gritty and it gets spooky. They know how to make it spooky. There was a little bit of the thing that bugs me when they try to make it dark in the 90s way, like making it extreme dark. Oh, what's this, you know, sort of like in the realm of torture porn kind of version of what darkness is. I like spooky more than I like that, but I will say that it doesn't linger on that stuff too much, and that, like, when you see Arkham, it's creepy and it's scary, and it's the kind of shit that you want to see when you're looking for something like this. So I love it.
Yeah,
absolutely love it.
Yeah, it was cool. It's really good. Also, it's like that kind of, like, you know, first part of a, like, you know, it doesn't, like, everything for the last year at least of Batman has felt like it's like part of, like, yeah. And it does still feel like it's connected to that, obviously, but it's kind of starting to go in a different direction, and
absolutely
I definitely dug it. It was great.
Also, he's only in it for a second, but the redesign of Professor Pig is brilliant. Loved that. I don't know if that's like something that's happened before, but I think that looks really, really creepy and wonderful. He's only in one panel, I think. He's like second page, something like that. He's like super early on.
No, I don't
think
it has.
It's good.
Yeah,
like,
I
love
it. Yeah, that's cool. Definitely.
Yeah. It's a good.
Also,
look.
I like the new status quo. It's a good status quo for Barbara Gordon going back to being Oracle, but
yep.
Like, also not really completely giving up being Batgirl. It's not it's just like it. I don't know. There was a lot of really cool character stuff that cast stuff going on with it.
Batman needs a man in the chair, to use a term. But it's like, and so it makes me happy that they've gone back to that thing. Like, having somebody to report back to and kind of be an omniscient narrator helps Batman stories. It really just does. Barbara right. Gordon being there, being like, I know this, this, and this, so shut up, and we don't need to explain it through some sort of big convoluted story thing. We can just be like, I know it because I'm here. I have the internet. I'm looking at you. Do this. Turn right. Cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no reason to explain this shit. It's just, it helps move the stories forward. And I like that.
Yeah. And then also, because clearly from the solicitations, at least, there's going to be a shit ton of Batman stuff coming out. Like, it looks like most of the DC line is going to be pretty Batman centric. Like, it makes sense to really, like, there's like that variant cover for this that's like the wraparound that shows like the whole cast and like what they're kind of doing with it. And you know, I think it's good. It's like they can pull off having 50 Batman comics because
also,
there's so many characters.
That Damian redesign, I kind of like it.
Yeah,
I have a feeling people
it's
are going to hate
weird,
it,
but I like cause it
because it's so understated. I love like the throwback to his royalty and his League of Shadows thing on his hands. He's got the gold filigree on his gloves.
Yeah.
But like, it's the only real adornment he's got to his whole costume. He's, you know, he's in a dark costume because he's fucking operating at night. It's not the old put yellow and red on him so that people shoot at him thing. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
You know,
I like his mask with the weird bat wing ears.
That's a cool look. Yeah. Overall, very good. Okay, so for Kids Fair, we have a big Nate in your face graphic novel. And for people who can't get enough of The Boys, and have read the entire The Boys series, we have the trade paperback for Dear Becky from The Boys. Don't worry, no one's going to buy it because we could not sell that single issue to save our lives. I stopped carrying it after issue 2 because it sold poorly. But who knows? Maybe
Series The Boys?
The series the Dear Becky, the new the new series. People were just like,
gotcha.
There's 5 omnibuses. I'm already 4 omnibuses behind. Why am I going to start a new thing? I think is really where everyone was at. It's just series like this get to a point where they have so much backstock. If you've got 100 issues of a series and then you start again like 20 years down the line, people are like, no thanks.
Yeah,
that's at least that's how I see it. Okay, here's the thing. I mean, you probably were aware of this if you are a comic fan, because this was kickstarted and it's been out there for a while. But Berserker, B-R-Z-R-K-R, from Matt Kent and Keanu Reeves, who you may remember from such films as Bill and Ted, the most recent one, and Bill and Ted, the other ones. Yeah, weird. I don't know. This feels like a Valiant comic straight up. This is like reading somebody just was like, ooh, I really like Eternal Warrior and I really like Bloodshot. So I squished them together and now we have Eternal Bloodshot. This like legitimately could be an amalgam comic for Bloodshot and Eternal Warrior. It's cool.
That's a good point.
It is straight up written like a Valiant comic. It feels like this came straight out of Valiant. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, no one would pay attention to this book if it weren't for Keanu Reeves on it. And that's not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that this is as good as any Valiant book that has been ignored by everyone for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how hard we pushed them, they were they're a tough sell, as it turns out. But this is cool, and I'm sure that if you want a super bloody, like, this is John Wick only unkillable. So if John Wick could not die, that's what you have here. It's just murder,
the immortal
murder.
John Wick.
Yep, that's basically what this is, the immortal John Wick. And it's cool.
Yeah, it felt to me like it was like it's like a movie that Keanu Reeves wanted to make, so they got the IP out there.
Yep, that's it, getting the IP out there.
Like it, and the thing that the only thing that you didn't mention in it is that the art is by Ron Garney, who is great, and it's got a Raphael Grandpa cover.
Yes,
it's actually not my favorite Raphael Grandpa that I've ever seen, but it's still decent. I like his art, so it's got like.
It's crazy that they chose that when they had the Lee Bermejo cover for their like 1 in 25. That Lee Bermejo cover is great.
Huh. I didn't see it. Yeah, I saw there's a Dan Mora cover as well. But either way, this is cool. The art's really good. It's rock solid. It's an action movie.
Yeah.
And your Eternal Warrior comparison is definitely apt.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer 23 is out now. We've got another epic collection of Captain America. This is Lives Again. So I can only assume that is the... like issue 100 kind of era. Nope, is not. This is Tales of Suspense, Avengers number 4, and Strange Tales.
Oh, so it's when he came back in the Silver Age.
Yeah, it's the Silver Age version. Okay.
Yeah.
Weird.
Avengers 4 is the one, and then when he came back.
All right. Crime Syndicate number 1. This was, to me, what I thought, like, when I saw DC's output, I was like, okay, cool, I've read 3 great DC books, and then there was going to be this pile of garbage that they just released, and I was actually kind of mad at them for even releasing it when I saw it. I was like, why would you do this? This is superfluous and nonsense. And I was like, well, I should probably read it because, you know, the Marvel books haven't shown up yet, so I'll read this, and I'm still waiting on Diamond. And I sat down and read it, and it is a goddamn delight. This is a really fun book. Like, really fun. I enjoyed every moment of this. It is much less beefy. It's much less important, let's say, than the rest of the DC output. It doesn't feel like it feels like a fun book, and it is. It really is. And it's
absolutely
also like,
yeah, the first
I was just gonna say the
first two pages are friggin' awesome.
They are.
Three pages.
There's some great stuff. There's an origin for Ultraman or whatever his name is. And yeah, it's great. It's fun, and it's not. What's great about it is that it is very not heavy. It goes out of its way to be, you know, like a lot of times when you would do a crime syndicate story, you would try to make it like, let's see how dark and horrible we could do it. You know, there's this way that you could tell this story that's going to be like, oh, look, this is intense and these are the terrible things that you're going to see. And instead, this is just goofy as fuck and fun. Really fun. Hmm. That's what I'll say. There are lots of little jokes in it, and they land. They're good. So I dug it. High marks. Again, there wasn't a DC book I disliked this week. So crazy.
Yeah, I also, crazy. I would, the only thing I didn't like was the weird shirtless Flash, but you know, whatever.
okay.
Minor
so
quibble.
I'm hoping you know what this is about. I'm going to read the synopsis now because I want to see. This is a book called Dead Dogs Bite, number one, from Dark Horse Comics. I read it, and I mean, maybe it's just that there isn't a lot of plot yet, because it really hasn't... Okay, now I'm reading... Okay, so the solicit says, Cormac Guffin has gone missing. It's been 3 days, and no one has seen hide nor hair of her. The police have nothing. The townsfolk are acting more like a funeral procession than a search party. If Cormac has any hope of being found, it rests with the slouching shoulders of her best friend, Joe. Joe will need her wits about her, though, because like any story worth hearing, nothing is what it seems. So far, everything is what it seems. in this issue, we get a couple of like little cool character moments with the main character. She is very likable. It's like you read this and you are on board with this, like, character wise knocked out of the park. This is very well written. Again, there is not a lot going on. All you know is that there's somebody missing, and there are some bizarre moments in this that seem Lynchian. Like, there's a moment where it's like the story is going along as normal, and you see our main character cutting out Polaroid pictures and sticking them on the backs of milk cartons. Is this how she's going about looking for her friend? I have no fucking clue, to be honest.
Yeah, there's
it's confusing.
It is confusing on the surface. The things that I will add to the discussion is that the art is very, very, very good, and that the pacing is kind of slow.
The art is kind of in that like Tommaso kind of world, is kind of where I'd put it.
Yeah,
if you like Tommaso, you're probably gonna like this.
Or like,
like Stray Bullets,
David Aja, maybe.
David Aja is absolutely David Aja. Yeah, yeah, it's in that realm. So if you like that kind of indie, by way of kind of mainstream indie look, it's going to be your bag.
Yeah, there's like definitely Stray Bullets ish. There's like this weird kind of underground, but having the thing that they're all looking for be someone who's literally named Mac Guffin, I'm just kind of like, come on, like you can't have it be like that fucking in your face. Like they're like, that's like when I saw that, I was just, so I haven't read it, but I did pick it up based on the art being really, really strong and being interested in it. But I'm just kind of like, okay, Mac Guffin, like, come on.
Unrelated, but sort of related, I will say that I did once see a Steven Seagal movie where the main character's name was Marshall Justice. So Just like he was not a marshal. His name was Marshall. His last name, his first name was Marshall. His last name was fucking Justice. Holy shit. Nice. Oh God. That guy is as subtle as a 9-pound hammer. let's see.
Yeah.
All right. So, another great book this week. It feels like everybody's trimming down their numbers. I hope to God this is true and they're just releasing good stuff because there was a lot less crap this week. And
this was a nice balance this week. I will, as a consumer, this was a nice, just like a nice stack of books.
Yeah.
Like a ton of quality, like a ton of unexpected quality too. Like, you know, like we were talking about with Crime Syndicate or whatever, like, you know, like it was just cool. So I think I know which one you're about to talk about.
I'm going to talk about
echo whatever you're saying.
Demon Days, the new X-Men book by Peach Momoko. Holy crap. Beautiful. This is something that feels like a time that when I was reading comics, like really, like when I was subscribing and getting them every week and didn't own a comic shop, it was going on. And it feels like something that doesn't go on anymore. Like when they did like 1602 and they did 1984 and they did all these things that are just like big conceptual Marvel stories that are completely removed and just taken into a completely new world. All of the characters are reinvented. In this case, it's all crazy Shinto deities reimagined. You've got all sorts of just amazing yokai monsters, all done as a samurai slash yokai story. Beautiful, beautiful. I mean, if you like,
there's a long-standing.
If you like Peach Momoko, you will love this book. Go on.
Yeah, there's a long-standing tradition of like parable X-Men comics, like that X-Men annual where they tell the like fairy tale, the space swashbuckling fairy tale, and you know, I mean, any X-Men fan knows like there's a ton of stuff. So it's like there's a pedigree for these, and you've been talking about Peach Momoko. And I guess mainly just because of variant covers, and for whatever reason, I think they just sell, so I don't really see them. So this is really my first seeing the artwork of Peach Momoko and the storytelling, and I think it's just top notch. It's really, really cool. It's got like a nice, like watercolor palette, but the art and the graphic storytelling is like very, very cool. This is, I can see what the hype is about when it comes to Peach Momoko for the first time. So this was definitely great.
Real cool.
Marvel's got a champ on the bleachers there.
Absolutely. This
Peach Momoko.
Dr. Doom trade paperback number 2, Bedford Falls. This is that ongoing story where Dr. Doom let himself get put into custody for a terrorist attack so that he could solve the mystery in a very non-Doctor Doom kind of moment. I loved this series, but I never got to finish it, so I'm probably going to pick this guy up. Dreaming Waking Hours number 8 is out. Fear Case number 2 is out, which is the Matt Kent story, which is like kind of a horror fan fiction story about Pulp Fiction, kind of, if you really want to take it to that level. There is a literal, the case in this case is an actual case full of fear, and you're not supposed to open it because there's bad stuff inside. So I took it as like some sort of extension of the Pulp Fiction universe.
Interesting.
And we should have had Firepower by Kirkman and Samnee out this week. We would normally have that, but Diamond decided that I didn't need that this week, so just charged me for it and did not deliver it with my order because they kind of suck. I will also say that we had a fuck ton of damages this week, so I do apologize if there are certain covers which you cannot find. There is a Star Wars book that we don't have a single non-damaged copy of this week, unfortunately, and I apologize for that as well. That was not Diamond's fault. That was UPS definitely dropped that on the edge and just crunched the edge of every book in one of these boxes. That was a
UPS has been fucking up lately. I gotta say, like, I deal with them at my job, and it's totally unrelated, you know, but like, it's just like their drivers are like super stressed out and like overworked. Yeah. No, and they're in like this weird rush all the time. They're like flipping out all the time. Yeah. And like, and it's been just like the last like month or so that it's gotten really out of hand. And like I've had to at my office, like I've had to be on the horn with those guys being like, what the fuck? Like, come on.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on.
It is weird. I think there's something going on at UPS. Anyway, there's a new heavy metal out.
It's probably COVID.
It's probably the same thing that's driving us all insane. So I cut everybody slack these days, but I mean, definitely there have been problems.
Yeah, they're probably like understaffed, overburdened kind of thing. But I'm sure they are.
Heavy Metal 304 out this week. Hellions number 10 is out this week, and it is an arcade story, if that is a thing that you are excited about.
Yeah, pretty cool.
There it is. And the book that the most important book this week by far is Infinite Frontier number 0. This is basically DC pulling a move that is long overdue, but is also just massive move. Cannot overstate how big a deal this is for them moving forward as a company. It's a great idea. It's, in a nutshell, it's a story structure in which every story that has ever been told at DC is currently canon. They can pull from anything they want. There are new worlds being made all the time. Anything is on the table for anything. Characters can pop over from other worlds and flip-flop around. Who gives a shit? Everything's canon, and you can do whatever you want, and I'm very pleased with this.
Yeah. It's essentially just like a sampler for everything that's coming out. So if you hear us talking about it and you're like, you know, like, even like hearing you being as into DC as you are, and for me as a longtime fan, like, it's always these moments where they really seem to have their shit together, like, make me happy as a fan. There's a couple moments in here that I was very, very pleased about.
My God.
Also, like, if you're following the main Batman, if you're following the main Batman book, there's like essentially like the biggest chunk of this is like by that Batman creative team and ties directly into the issue that that came out this week. But it is essentially just like a sampler of like, here's where DC is at. Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And there were, I mean, there was probably a weak link, but I mean, there was nothing bad in that whole issue too. And I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Again, if you don't like Grifter,
had the most,
there was something bad, but.
Well, but the strongest stuff, I mean, it looks like Grifter is going to be part of the Batman book.
Sure is.
Going forward. But it's like the strongest stuff had the most pages. And then the weakest stuff just kind of, the like less universally appealing stuff had like, you know, two pages here or there.
The one page of Arsenal for you. You got one Arsenal page.
Dude, I'm all about it. I was very happy about that.
Spoiler, but we basically got one page where
I don't think anyone cares.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, Arsenal shows up and is like, I guess I'm alive again. Anybody want to go get a beer? I was like, that's basically the whole
thing. Yeah, pretty much. Like, he calls Green Arrow and hangs up, and he's just like, yeah, I'm not ready to tell him yet or whatever. But there's like a big Alan Scott moment.
Moment.
Like, you know, just, but
it's a retcon of when they wussed out before, you know, but that's cool.
Well, yeah, to some extent, I would say they did really wuss out before, because like when they did it, that was the only version of Alan Scott that was around. And but
he wasn't allowed to have a love interest. He was only allowed to be gay if his husband exploded in a train explosion, which is
true.
A pretty fucking, that's some weak fucking sauce. as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, for me, the weakest sauce of it was like DC unveils Green Lantern is gay, and then it's just like the one from World War II that no one gives a shit about. It's not like any of the Green Lanterns anyone knows or whatever. But it's the thing about having a million versions of a character, you know?
I mean, again, this it's not really my world to talk about, but it is. I think it's cool that it's an older man too. There's something there's something interesting about that. Like having just like a young, sprightly gay character who is living their life in this way. You have so much other stuff. There's so much baggage of their life prior to the times when there was at least the level of acceptance we're at now. There was a time when it was so far worse than it is now that he has an interesting level of story baggage that he can go back to. And I think that's cool. And people of his generation, you can still have people in the Justice Society who are bigoted and you'd go, that makes sense. He's fucking 75 years old. That I can see him being homophobe. You know, that makes sense.
At this point though, like a the youngest member of the Justice Society would be like 100, right?
Because
like
probably.
It's been 80 years since the Justice Society formed, and they were in there. Like the youngest one was a teenager, so he'd be like 95 or 6 or something. That's like the rest of them will be over 100.
But time moves differently in all these universes, so we, you know.
Well, if you read All-Star Squadron Annual 3, you would understand why the DC heroes age differently from the Golden Age. And in a very... I actually recently reread it. It's a perfect story. It's like, nice. It's Roy Thomas, so it's like, it's weird, but like, you know, because it's just like, it's like how the Solo movie, when that came out, it was just like, this is just like a Wikipedia entry, like writ large as an action film, you know, but it's like every Roy Thomas comic starring the Justice Society was kind of that.
Yeah,
I don't know, whatever.
Also, I will say, Wonder Woman's costume design, dope. Love it.
Which one?
The one in Infinite Frontier.
Definitely.
When she's moving on to this new story that they're going to in the future. That is not the one that we have out this week. This is a different one.
Yes.
This book is the status quo Wonder Woman this week. And then we're going to have the crazy regular Wonder Woman, and we will also have three other different Wonder Woman books that are for different Wonder Woman characters.
So. Yeah, like the Future State Wonder Woman is going to be coming, is going to be doing stuff. The Wonder Woman's mom is going to be doing stuff. There's another, like, there's all kinds of cool stuff.
There's a graphic novel for Nubia.
Nubia.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing in the, and I don't want to spoil the big part of Infinite Frontier, but the one thing that would made me probably made me the happiest about it is that, like, you know, you always have with the line wide stuff and like the, you know, the line books, the big bad, the big threat, you know, whatever. Like, I was very happy with the threat that they come up with
of
for
course.
This. It was
yes,
and in future we can talk about more about that.
Right. I will say that the ending kind of made me sad because we lost one of my favorite characters in the world. Actually, two of my favorite characters got iced in the on the last page of Infinite Frontier. Who knows how iced they were? I mean, in the realm of whatever, but still two of my favorite characters.
I wouldn't think that they'd be totally iced because, like, it's not just two, it's like seven.
Right, but I don't care about anybody except for those two characters. Anyway, but still, damn it, so cool. All right, let's move on. James Bond, Agent of Spectre number 1 is out from Dynamite. We have King in Black, Captain America number 1 out. We got Gwenom versus Carnage number 3 of 3. There is a King in Black handbook to explain to you who all of the players in this book are. It is
handy.
I mean, it is a handy book. But I got to tell you, man, there are people who are buying every tie-in And honestly, the tie-ins are good for this series. And I think the perfect example for that is right here. It's Thunderbolts, number 3. This was a fun, stupid thing. And I don't want to have to spoil it, but I mean, there's only one way to sizzle this. The Thunderbolts go out and they retrieve the Sentry's corpse that's been torn in half, tape him back together, and drag him around for an adventure like fucking Weekend at Bernie's. So
yeah, they're on a bus.
I don't know what to tell you guys. If that's not your thing, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But it was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I dug that, and again, I've been really, really liking King in Black. It is one of the good Marvel crossovers. Yeah. It is not Empire. It is fun. And also, another tie-in would be Wiccan and Hulkling, number 1. So we get, this is post-Wiccan and Hulkling marriage. So not to spoil anything, but they got married in Empire. And this is their King in Black crossover. We got... Yep. Maestro, trade paperback, Symphony in Gamma Key. And we have Man-Bat, number 2, which
is awesome.
It's such a throwback. It's such a, like...
I know, but it's awesome. This Man-Bat book is so good.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it came out within the last 15 years to me. Like, this feels like I easily could have picked this up 20 years ago. But it's great.
Yeah, I mean, if a comic book that's basically just Man-Bat versus like the classicest version of the Suicide Squad that you can imagine, with really good art and story, if that's a thing that would appeal to you, then it's your book. I like it a lot, and it does feel like relatively modern, like maybe like immediately post or pre like whatever's going on with like Justice League Dark or whatever, but like, you know, it's a classic Man-Bat story. Yeah. Timeless.
Yep.
Good.
And this thing, I wanted to hate this book too. I want to have varying opinions this week, but I can't, because god damn it, Noctara was really good, and I swear I was really like, I got to tell you, I had ordered like a massive number of these. When I found out the team, I was like, oh shit, I need to order a bunch of these. And then I saw the main cover that looked like some sort of shitty Witchblade darkness thing.
Yeah, it does look very Witchblade.
I was like, you know what? I don't think I need to go too hard on this thing. It's probably going to be terrible. Because even though the Boss Logic cover, I think, is beautiful and brilliant, even that cover it makes me feel like it's something cheesy and 90s. And then the internal story is so in depth, and the world that they built is so clever. It actually kind of bums me out that I didn't go harder on this one, because I know I'm gonna sell out. In essence, there was an event that happened that dropped darkness. They call it the PM, the Great PM or something like that. And world's engulfed in darkness, and everything that spends enough time in this darkness turns into a shade, turns into some sort of demonic creature. And so you need to have electric lights to keep, you know, candles or whatever else. Just, you need to have some sort of light on you, or else you will turn into one of these monsters. Cities are dropping left and right. There are only a few small places left in America that haven't been taken over by these monsters. And there are these couriers that go between the places. And they have a specific name for them. I can't remember. Ferrymen that bring people and, you know, supplies, whatever, back and forth to different cities. They have these big rigs that are outfitted with massive lights, big crazy lighting things and whatever. She's got this weird outfit that has a big light in her face. It's a cool design. It's a cool concept. The book is fucking good. I don't know why I'm mad that it's good. I like Scott. He's a nice guy. I don't know why I'm mad that it's a good book, but it is a really good book, and it's really up my alley too, because it's got that like end of the world, everything's monsters, like, and the maybe the antagonist at the end who's introduced is so goddamned cool. We don't know. We think that he might be. They're pitching him as being on our side, but he pretty much looks like the villain by the time we get to the end.
Yeah.
And he's cool. But his whole deal is really cool. I won't explain it because it will ruin it, but it's real cool. So high marks for Noctera, if that's the kind of thing that you're into. It's way better than that cover makes it look. And again, I'm not shitting on the cover. I actually liked The Darkness quite a bit. That the whole Garth Ennis run of The Darkness was phenomenal. But it definitely, it does not look like a modern book. I thought it was just going to be kind of lacking substance, and it is not. That's my point.
Yeah, I like Scott Snyder. I got a little tired of his DC stuff towards the end. I won't lie, but when it was like, here's a new concept, I was like, I'll check this out, and I picked it up, and I was like, this looks good enough on the surface that I went for it, and it is good. It does look from the cover to be very Witchblade-ish, and it is not internally very Witchblade-ish.
Nope, not at all.
But I think you covered all the salient points.
I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on with me today. I'm feeling very talky today, I guess.
Hey, I'm letting you roll, baby.
Drank a lot of coffee. Power Pack, number 4 of 5. You love this series, right? Like,
I like Power Pack. I probably should like it more, but Future State just kind of killed it for me, because that was just like getting so many books that I don't normally get. It just like couldn't figure out how to budget it. But the art looked good. I did buy the first issue of it, and it started out really good. It's classic Pack, you know.
Runaways number 34 is out. I can't believe that Runaways is still going, but it is.
Apparently, neither can they, because the entire the cover of it is like, hey, we're not canceled yet. I was like, really? That's a selling point.
I remember that was like She-Hulk back in the Burn days. Was all like every like 5 covers was like, hey, you really need to buy this. We're like really close to getting canceled.
Yeah.
Some sort of variation on please buy 2 copies, because I really want to keep writing this story. Savage Avengers trade paperback volume 3, Enter the Dragon, is out. There's a really cool Scary Monsters issue out this week. If you are a million years old like I am, I mean, I don't technically remember Castle of Frankenstein. It wasn't actually my childhood. This was more like a 60s, 70s kind of thing, but as a collector of all things monsters and lover of monster stuff, definitely have run across many, many issues of Castle of Frankenstein, and this is a big retrospective on the magazine, which is awesome. Castle of Frankenstein was a cool-ass magazine.
I had to say, I checked it out and was like, this magazine is cool as shit. I have been, for some reason, like artistically obsessed with Frankenstein lately, and I really don't know exactly why that happened or is, but I thought that magazine looked great. There's like a ton. There's like a beefy Frankenstein magazine.
Yeah. Yes. Cool. Definitely worth your $10. Sensational Wonder Woman, number 1.
Hmm.
This is fascinating. Yeah, this is a just straight up Wonder Woman story. Like more so than I think I've seen in years.
Yeah, I this has the feel of like one of those like it was on the website and then they made it into a comic, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, like it's a like digital first.
Hot girl. Yeah, it's clearly not like if you read Infinite Frontier, it's not like a continuity book like that. But it's the classic Wonder Woman story, where with a classic Wonder Woman villain, Dr. Psycho, and who is the weird midget who mind controls people and is a total scum, and then Hawkgirl, and they fight that guy. But nice looking book, classic Wonder Woman book. Look good. Not gonna be for everybody, but worth it, I thought.
We have Sonyaversal number 2 out. Don't worry, everyone. I've heard your message loud and clear. This is not one of those ones that you want. We will be getting rid of it. yes, this is not a big seller. I don't know. I was like, we were hitting it out of the park with a lot of these like multiple cover crazy things with lots of crazy cover art, and I was like, I guess I'll try this, and nope. No thank you, said the purchasing public. Anyway, Star Wars High Republic, we got a second printing of number 2. We've got issue number 3 of High Republic, and we've got High Republic Adventures. Okay, so technically we don't have High Republic Adventures on the website because they were all fucking crushed by Diamond. If you want a copy, we do have them here. They've just got little squished corners. And I was afraid to put them on the web because I knew I would get complaints from anyone who ordered them online. So, you know, if you're local and you want one, we got them. And if you can hear me smacking my foot on this chair, you can tell that I have definitely had too much fucking caffeine today. All right. We've got another Strange Adventures 7, the other cover that we didn't get last week, that we didn't get the month before, that, long story. But yeah. We finally have all the issues of Strange Adventures through many convoluted channels. There is there's a digest-sized version of the Superman Adventures series. We got a trade paperback of the Lex Luthor storyline. Cool. It's Superman Adventures 27, 54, 55, 65, 66. A strange collection of those, but like kids love that shit, man. It's super popular. Like that Batman Adventures, Superman Adventures, like all those books sell very well. So into that. All right. Now let me talk about what I think it's definitely my book of the week. Regardless of the importance of Infinite Frontiers, God damn it, Swamp Thing number 1. I cannot imagine a better way to bring Swamp Thing back than this. Definitely, I know that they were in a meeting and they said, hey, you know what? We could Immortal Hulk one of our characters. And I know for a fact, like it feels like it, but also it's written by Ram V and the art is so goddamned good. And the art is so referential. It's actually so referential and so reverential that there are moments of this book when they reference specific art styles from the history of Swamp Thing that as a fan, I looked at it and I was just like, oh my God, look at that. That is from one of the Alan Moore books. That is gorgeous and I love it to death. And the color palette was perfect. Just, it couldn't have been better. Could not have possibly been better. The story essentially, in a nutshell, we've got this character who is he's of Indian descent. He goes back to India to visit his family, and something happens, and he is essentially infected with the avatar of the green. He is infected with Swamp Thingitis. And unlike the prior Swamp Things, where they are just Swamp Thing, he is turning into Swamp Thing at times when he can't control it. And I love that idea. It changes the game and it makes for it opens up the world so much for so many cool stories. I think having Swamp Thing grounded in the human world was something that Alec Holland did while he was living in the swamp, but there was so little of Alec Holland there that it was tough to grasp onto Swamp Thing as a person. You know what I mean? And I think this will be this will be an interesting experiment.
So yeah, we'll see like where it goes long term and whether it like kind of takes off. Rumby is awesome. Mike Perkins, the artist, is awesome. He did The Stand. He did the most recent Lois Lane. He's a very like the characters are modeled, you know, like it's not right. Like it has like just like, but he's a master for sure. And I think that, you know, number one, with this Infinite Frontier, like having it feel like familiar but like ground zero is important, so they nailed that. And then also with Swamp Thing, it's like you have the classic Swamp Thing, the wine Wrightson, where it's like the man who becomes a monster, and then Alan Moore obviously famously inverted that and had it be like, no, he's just a monster, he's not a man. And then it's like, but because that just defined the character for so long, if you want to do new stories and you're doing a new Swamp Thing and it's that character of Swamp Thing, it's always coming down to that man monster back and forth kind of question. And so this is like allowing the writer and artist to do something totally new with the concept that like isn't like, it just kind of bucks expectation. I think it hit it right out of the park. It was really good.
And there's this wonderful throw. The new antagonist is amazing. Mm. There's something about the idea of these elemental forces, like the Swamp Thing character is portrayed to be such a gigantic, massive force, that when he encounters his opposite in this character called the Pale Wanderer, who is essentially the avatar of the desert. When he meets him, he's super young and doesn't understand what his abilities are, who he is, why he is. And he basically shows up and talks to this guy and he's like, oh, you don't know what your deal is? You know what? Let me tell you what your deal is. Eventually I'm going to fucking kill you, you know, and you're going to kill me. We're going to kill each other. So it's cool. That's how these things go, because we're eternal monsters and that's our deal. But you know what? I don't want to just do this without you knowing why it's happening. So he messes with him and like is essentially going to tutor him on how to become an eternal being. And his first move is pretty much just to beat his ass and throw him out of the world. But
yeah,
to prove also that he can't die. What's that?
Yeah, but how much more sense does it make to have the antagonist be like, so you have an avatar of plants, like having his nemesis be an avatar of sand as opposed to like an avatar of like rot. Decay or whatever, like they did so much with Scott Snyder. I think that was his version.
It was the rot.
The rot. And I was just like, it never really worked for me, because like the rot worked for me as like an animal man antagonist, but not so much as a... Because especially with plants, like decay it wouldn't be their nemesis, it would be their friend. So this works a lot better, and it's just very smart. And Ram V is awesome. He did Justice League Dark and is still gonna be doing it as a backup in Justice League. And is great. And I'm super happy that he's doing stuff for DC. He's badass. Like him a lot.
I'm so happy about this. It honestly, the only thing I don't like about this book is the fact that it is being limited to 10 issues, and that bums me out. I want this to go the distance. I want 100 issues of this fucking book.
Yeah, I'm, well, if it takes so off, excited. Then there'll be more.
Fingers crossed.
Let's hope it does.
But yeah, again, my book of the week. Could not have enjoyed this book anymore. Transformers 84 trade paperback, Secrets and Lies. There is also a Beast Wars number 2 comic book, and of course our Walking Dead number 10, the deluxe editions, and a trade paperback of The Fate of the Phoenix from X-Men. It's one of the epic collections.
The classic from Claremont.
Yeah. It's got all that stuff from that era, you know. It's 129 to 141, 142, 143, X-Men Annual number 4. But then it's also got Marvel Treasury Edition 26 and 27, and Phoenix the Untold Story and material from Marvel Team Up. So it's a it's a good collection. Yeah.
Marvel Team Up. Oh, I know what one it is. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's Spider-Man and the X-Men teaming up, and it's got that great Barry Windsor Smith cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good issue. One.
Yeah, and that is it for this week. A very small week, but literally one of the best weeks of comics that I can remember, honestly.
Rock solid.
I can't tell you how excited I have been about these books. Actually, I literally just did tell you how excited I was about these books. So you know what? Forget I said that. But yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say just like I'm going to pat myself on the back for like 5 seconds and just say like I've been saying for fucking years that the biggest thing wrong with Marvel and DC is a non-titaned editorial vision. And I think that I feel somewhat vindicated that, like, despite the fact that it came about by a huge massive layoffs and fucking, you know, everybody's getting paid less and there's a million things that are terrible about it, like having less people control the ship makes the ship run better, tighter. It's like all the books are better, you know, like it's so far, you know, I don't know.
I mean, it was
my told you so moment.
I agree. I think you're absolutely right. And I mean, you also called the fact that that continuity was their problem, that that sticking to tight continuity was killing DC. And they seem to realize that as well and have basically destroyed continuity here, where it's like all continuity is just as good as any other. Done.
Yeah.
You know what? The vampire Batman's out there someplace. It's fine. You can bring him in if you need him. There's a lot of weird shit out there. And that's great. I'm very happy with that.
I mean, that's why I read DC my whole life. Like, I like that, you know, I don't feel like having no rules is the way to go, but I feel like having lots of play is like, you know, it's one of the things that DC did well. And like, I, you know, as a kid, like, I loved the idea of these huge, like, you know, I talked about All-Star Squadron Annual 3 or whatever, but like, I read that when I was 10 and I, like, you know, lifelong fan of the Justice Society, you know, it's just like, whatever. Anyway,
this is it. this is what I like about DC Comics. And it's the stuff that is when I have had bouts of being a fan of DC Comics, this is the kind of stuff that drew me in, and I'm super happy. So
that's totally all. Awesome.
All right. Yeah. So follow us at I'm Actually Comics on Instagram. Buy things from coastcitycomics.com. We would very much appreciate that. And all those other things. Follow the Funbox Monster podcast if you'd like to. We're watching a really terrible movie this week that Matt suggested called... It's something about Paul Bunyan. It's like a horror movie. It's called Axe Giant.
Oh, man.
The Story of Paul Bunyan.
Ooh.
I'm terrified. But
I want to see that.
I'm curious. It might be okay. Who knows?
I want to see it.
Also, our friend
Paul Bunyan
Damien
is my favorite mythological character.
Our friend Damien has a new movie out. So if you feel like watching a good scary movie that has a local awesome person in it, the new Wrong Turn reboot just came out with Damien starring. He is the big bad in the story. So he is the villain of this version of Wrong Turn, previously called Foundation, I guess, but now just called Wrong Turn again. Cool. So check that out. Nice. It is available on VOD and available on the DVD, I believe, and Blu-ray. Ooh. So check that out. It's some of my friends have seen it, and they have said that they very much enjoyed it. A lot of people are mad because it's not like the original Wrong Turn, but it's written by the fucking Wrong Turn guy. Come on. Deal with it. It's different.
You know... There are reasons to not like things, but it wasn't like I expected is not a good reason. To
no,
like
that's a
things.
That's
like,
a bad
I'm
reason.
Sorry. It's just like retire that critique.
That's a good reason to like something, is that it wasn't like what I expected it to be. Anyway,
yeah.
Check all those things out, and we will see you next week. Good night.
Awesome.
Bye.
Don't need no tea.
See you, dude.
Don't need no chicory. Don't need the buzz coming down on me. If I had one wish.